Hey there, and welcome to another episode of the Love Offering Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Adams, and today's guest is Michaelyn Smith. She's on the show today sharing how to make a house a home. You may recognize Michaelyn from The Nester. She is on the show sharing memorable universal decorating truths that apply to every house style and budget by guiding you to do what you know, use what you have, and finish what you started. Learn how to make better decorating decisions with ease. Today's episode is packed full of simple, encouraging truths and quick takeaways for you to implement into your home immediately. Hello, Michaelyn, and welcome to the Love Offering Podcast. I'm so happy to have you.
Well, hey, Rachel. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me today.
So it's interesting. So this is six seasons of the Love Offering Podcast, and I've never had a decorator on the podcast. I mean, this is neat. It's going to be such a fun conversation.
Yay. Well, I love all things home, so I think we'll have a good time.
Yeah, me too. And I was sharing with you, and the listeners know that, so we lived in an RV while we were building our home that we're currently in. And for those of you looking around, I won't do it again because I already did it to Michaelyn. I was showing her my white walls with no curtains, no rug, no anything in the background. And then my camera fell. So I won't do that for everybody listening and watching right now. But I need your help because I have such a hard time committing to like putting a hole in the wall, or I mean every single wall in my house is white because I'm like, well, then I'll just decorate with color on my pillows and on my rugs and bedspreads and all the things. But all that to say, I'm excited about today because I think I've lived in maybe a level of fear of making the wrong decision and not doing it well, and so I don't do anything at all. Do you find that that's common with your followers?
I mean, part of me is like, let's just talk about your house today. I just want to talk about whatever questions you were going to ask. It doesn't matter. Let's just talk about this because so many people can relate. I can relate. I mean, behind me, I actually have a white wall today with nothing on it. So I think it's something that a lot of us struggle with. And then we have this secret guilt, which we should never have, about something as wonderful as and personal as our home. So yeah, let's jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I'm interested. So many people probably know you as the Nester, where you've been encouraging women to embrace their homes, imperfections and all, for many years. So have you always had a knack for decorating?
I have always loved all things home, and I didn't realize it for a long time. But looking back as an adult, I can see that when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, I was playing Barbies with my sister, and she was the most frustrated sister ever because she wanted to do dramatic interactions where Skipper was running away. And all I cared about was furnishing their house and decorating their houses. And then I look back to, my high school years, and on Friday nights, I was home in my room rearranging. I loved Martha Stewart, at a young age, getting the magazine really early. So now I can look back and see that, oh my gosh, I've always been obsessed with all things home. And I think that helped me kind of naturally learn some things that maybe gave me some confidence, because I think a lot of times we think people were born with a certain skill. I don't think that's true at all. I think that just some people had certain passions that they got to experiment with when they were young, before they knew to be embarrassed, before they cared, or in the privacy, like me, of my own bedroom, where I could hairspray pressed flowers up around my closet and move my furniture around. And my parents just let me play around and paint my room whatever color I wanted. So I got to see and learn, like, oh, I thought that paint color looked good. And when I get it on my walls, it's fluorescent, So I was making those mistakes at 15 and learning from them, which now looking back, I'm really grateful for.
Well, so I have to tell you, so my daughter Kate, who is 13, but when she was younger, we went to Hobby Lobby and we ended up getting like all of these styrofoam boards, and she cut them up to make a like dollhouse herself because she wanted them to get the paper to like make her own furniture and make her own wallpaper. And I mean, I have pictures of it. I'll have to send you because, and I started to think she's gifted in this way. I mean, and then that's what she would do. She wouldn't do like the interactions with the dolls. She would be rearranging furniture, and it's just so creative, using things from her house. And and so it's even making me think of my daughter and how I can pour into her. And because she is maybe naturally gifted or interested in this way. And so I actually, in fact, and I think she's got like a spatial awareness, like she loves to organize. And so I think especially, I know I'm going to love your book. I think she's going to love your book as well. And so I'd love to hear why do you think turning a house into a home is so important? Because any of us can have a house, but it's not as common to have a home where people feel just so welcome and warm. And does that make sense of what I'm trying to ask?
Absolutely. I think that's something that we all secretly long for. I think depending on how we grew up and the people around us, there are some people who even feel some guilt about longing for that, or feel like, oh, maybe it means I'm, you know, real materialistic and I'm not grateful. I don't believe that at all. I think that we were created in the image of a creative God who loves beauty, who created beauty for us to enjoy. It is natural for us to crave that. There's a quote from James Clear that says, "Environment is the invisible hand that shapes human behavior." I love that quote because if I paraphrase, it's kind of like the environments we create can control people in all the best ways. And I find that to be true. I think we can all think back to our own home or someone's home that we've been in, and we've instantly felt relaxed. And the thing is, you know, I've been on the internet teaching for 17 years or something. I have yet to come across one person who says, "I want a really pretty house so I can show off to all my neighbors and make them feel bad and impress them with all my beautiful things." None of us want that. We want a home that we feel comfortable with. We want a home that we're not embarrassed of, that we're not so distracted by the sofa that we hate that we can't connect with a friend. Like, we want to have a beautiful home so that we can use it and enjoy it. And that doesn't mean that we want perfection. As a matter of fact, I believe that imperfection plays a role. Imperfections put people at ease. When we go to someone's house and they are projecting a life that is perfect and beautiful and everything is pristine and new and fancy and impressive and in its place, I don't know about you, but I'm uncomfortable. I suddenly feel like I have to share the highlight reel of my life, and I can't share anything that, you know, I'm struggling with or anything like that. So it is so helpful to be reminded that it's actually the imperfections in our home and life that allow us to connect with each other, which is the highest purpose of our home. Whether we're, you know, home connecting with God and ourselves, whether we're connecting with our family, whether we're welcoming our friends and wanting to connect with them, those imperfections play a very important role, and we don't want our goal to be to get rid of them. When we have that mindset, I feel like then we can move forward and make actual progress in our home. To me, the goal of our home is to kind of forget about it so that we can use it. If you are fully using your home and enjoying it, you're doing it right.
Well, this is a little bit convicting to me because where we have just built this home, and I say that, we've lived here for a year and a half, but I'm still, until I have every room complete and every room looks great, I'm a little bit more hesitant to invite people in. And I think that I need to get over that. And so do you have any advice for, you know, we want to have a welcoming home. So how do we, is there a, you know, what's step one of creating a welcoming home? What would you suggest to us?
Well, listen, I am first a mindset girl. I think decorating begins in your head, not in the furniture store. I think anything, like any type of goal that you have, starts in your head. If your mindset isn't right, you know, you can paint a canvas or move your sofa, all of that, it's not going to really matter. So I think because I do the same thing, when I am having trouble feeling like I am ready to open my home, one of the things I do is I think back to some times in my life where I have felt the most seen and heard when I have been with other people, and especially in their home. And then I ask myself, what was the state of their house? What do I remember about their home? And the thing is, it's usually places where I dropped in. They invited me in the midst of whatever was going on. And they looked me in the eye and they asked great questions and they heard me and they related and they shared. They had dishes in the sink. Their sofa wasn't new, or if it was, it didn't matter. I felt welcome. That is what we long for when we go into someone's house. We are not longing to be impressed. None of us are. And it is hard to, I don't know, I sometimes feel like at least my mom's generation, they kind of were. I think we're more forgiving with that. Like, we all know, like, we don't want perfection. It still is hard, but I think it's a little bit easier for us. And I'm older than you, but still, I'm always so grateful for whoever in the friend group goes first. Like, think of every friend you have. Someone had to go first and be willing to share something imperfect, whether it was a funny joke of, you know, when their bathing suit fell off in the pool when they dove in, or, you know, when they tripped into the fountain, like, any, whatever. It's those funny, embarrassing stories that connect us. It's those times of honesty and vulnerability that make us feel we can trust each other. And I think the same happens with our house. When someone goes first and says, you know what, welcome to my home where it's not perfect, I trust you can relate. Hospitality is a form of trust. And I think that you know your friends good enough. There are some people we can't trust with our imperfections, but usually they're not the people that we're considering inviting over for dinner. And so my advice would be to baby step your way into hosting. And maybe that doesn't mean you have a dinner party for 12, but maybe that means you go ahead and invite some of your closest friends to the backyard for a bonfire, and they run in the house and go to the bathroom. You don't feel like you have to get everything ready, but you open it up before it's finished. And I think that is what has helped me. We've had Easter at our house where we had one curtain hung, things on the paint colors on the walls half done, furniture that's been ordered and hardly any place to sit. And neighbors came over that have never been to our house before, family. And I was so grateful I did it before I was perfectly ready, because I would never be perfectly ready.
Yeah. It just makes me even think about our hearts. You know, like, there's such a correlation, I feel like, with our homes and our hearts. You know, like, we're all so imperfect, and we just need to invite people into, like, the imperfections too of our own lives, and opening ourselves up just like we're opening up our homes. Like, there's such an intermarrying, and I think that's so beautiful to think about. But so you've written two other books, and your latest is titled House Rules. So how is this book different from the others that you released?
Well, the first book I wrote was really about exactly what we just talked about. The subtitle was, It Doesn't Have to Be Perfect to Be Beautiful. It was just about moving forward in the midst of imperfect circumstances. It's a decorating book that I wrote from a rental house. And then I wrote a book about cozy minimalism. And so that was more about getting the most amount of style with the least amount of stuff. Then I wrote a book called Welcome Home about hosting and decorating through the seasons. After those books were done, I was like, I have said all there is to say. But then I was getting many questions about the logistics of design, like the actual, yeah, but how do I pick out a sofa? Yeah, but why did I pick everything out on my mantle or my coffee table and it still looks weird, even though I love everything up there? So, like, the actual how-tos of design. And I feel like, you know, I think we think, oh, good decorator is someone who goes into an empty room and then buys all new stuff and then ta-da, it looks great and they made no mistakes. No, to me, a good decorator is someone like us who has some old stuff, some new stuff, some stuff we love, some stuff we don't really love, a little bit of a budget where we have to decide the best place to spend that budget. And then we have to make decisions on what to focus on and what not to worry about. That is exactly why I wrote this book. I consider myself a teacher more than a decorator. It's not a style book. You do not have to like my style to learn from it. It's about making confident decorating decisions, you know, even in the right order, but just more about those little tweaks, those little mindset shifts that when you go out to Target, instead of just saying, I'm looking for something to decorate my coffee table, we've all done that. No, I want you to go to Target and say, I know I'm looking for a vase that's probably at least a foot tall, and I don't want it to be clear. I want it to be a color, and I have a lot of angles in my room, so I want it to be kind of rounded or organic. Like, isn't that an easier, more fun way to shop when you go with a specific list? That's where I meet you in this book.
I need that. I wish you could just go to Target with me, but So you actually, though, even though your book is called House Rules, you actually don't like rules. So yes. Why are rules problematic for creative spaces?
You know, I was reading, I can't remember which of the Andrew Peterson books. I don't know if you've read them, but you know, he's a creative, he's a songwriter. He writes books. And he wrote his book for creatives, and I believe we're all creative. And he talks about how you have to earn the right to break the rules. But a lot of art forms are better when the rules are broken. But the truth is, when it comes to decorating or any creative endeavor, you want to break the rules because you believe whatever it is you're creating will be better, not because you don't know better. You want to break rules with confidence. And I totally believe, like, let's learn the universal rules of decorating, because there are some. There are actual reasons why some things look weird and other things look amazing together. It's about relationship and scale and all of these different factors that aren't really woo-woo. They're just truths. They're just the way we were created. And so when something's off of balance, we know that in our head, but we don't always know how to fix it. So yes, the first rule in my book of 100 rules is learn the rules to break the rules. Learn the rules, then break them beautifully with confidence, because you understand what you're doing.
So I'd love for you to share maybe a time that you broke a decorating rule and like how it was successful, like how it was a good result.
Oh, I feel like I break rules all the time. One of my favorite ways to break a rule is, I don't know, like, do you remember in high school, maybe geometry or something, learning about like the magic ratio or the golden triangle, things like that. Like in photography, they talk about it. In art history, they talk about it. Like the rule of thirds. There's all kinds of, you'll see that Da Vinci with the man. Is it Da Vinci? I don't know. And there's like all these lines that what it really is that the way we were created is that we are looking, our eyes are looking for certain types of balance. And when that is off, something in our head goes off and says, that don't look right. That doesn't look right. Now, I think one way, once you understand that, then let's say you're decorating your mantle, usually any piece of furniture that you are pairing art with, the first rule of thumb is to pair a piece of art that's about 2/3 the size of what it's hanging over. I never ever measure. You just eyeball it. But if it's way too small, it can feel weird. And if it's way too big, it can feel top heavy or like something looks like this head was enlarged. Like, what is happening? However, I think scale is something so fun to play with when you kind of get that down and get some confidence in maybe purposely using an oversized piece of art on an empty wall. Or I know I had a mantle at my last house and I hung these little bitty antlers on, like they were just so tiny and it felt kind of, it was unexpected. But because I had symmetry in the room, because I was obeying and kind of following rules of design in other places, that one place, instead of looking weird, it was like delightful. It was surprising. It was whimsical. And so that's, you know, and that's one time where I broke a rule on purpose. And I really, scale is probably one of the places I really like playing around with.
You know, it makes me think about, I remember, I think it was Lisa Turkhurst that was talking about decorating her home and how she wanted her home to tell a story. And not just be so generic, like that could, you could be walking into someone's home and it could be anybody's home, but your home can have a personality and it can be really indicative of you and your family and your history. And I think that's really neat to think about too. And so it's like part of a collection, maybe. Like, are there certain things that you collect yourself that you just love to add to your home?
Oh, totally. And I think what I love is that's so personal. I think there's whatever anyone collects, there is a creative way to show that off. And I definitely believe that collections should be grouped and shown off. I collect black and white and brown and white transferware. It's those dishes that have like an English pastoral countryside on them. When I first started collecting them, I just kept them in a cabinet, you know, like, oh, if we have salad, maybe I'll get it out. I got to protect them. And then I started kind of sprinkling them around the house. I'll have one next to my bed or one to hold, you know, mints by the back door. And then I thought, you know what? Collections make an impact when they are grouped together. And so I hung my collection of, I don't know, maybe I have 30 pieces of transferware. Really whimsical. I have a Victorian house right now. She's kind of formal. We're not formal people at all. And so I like that kind of unexpectedness of old timey dishes that have been used for lots and lots of years. A lot of mine are secondhand. All of them are, I think. But they're hung in a creative way. So they're like in this flowy, I'll get you a picture of it later if you need it. But they make an instant impact is the first thing you see when you come in my back door. It's probably 6 feet wide of like all random dishes hung together, layered, different. It's so eye-catching. And they're just random dishes I've collected over the years, but together they make a statement. So that's one thing that I collect, and it's so fun. And what it's done for me by having a dedicated place for my collection, because I can get carried away and like, I'll just collect these until I die and like have a room full of dishes. I don't need that. Like my collection feels complete. I'm not saying if I never run across an amazing little dish, I might buy it, but my wall feels finished and it allowed me to kind of have a stopping point for my collection because it's there. It makes an impact. It feels real personal. I love it. It's quirky. And I feel kind of like I don't have to be on the prowl to always be collecting these anymore.
Well, that makes me think. So once you finish a room, are you finished? Like, it's like that room is completed. I'm happy with it. And I'm going to move on to another room. Or are you constantly, cause you talked about as a little girl, you're like constantly rearranging and, you know, wanting to, so is that still the case for you?
For me personally? Yes. I think it's so fun. I'm not rearranging because I'm not content. I'm rearranging because it is a joy. It is so exciting for me. It's spring right now. Things are blooming in my backyard. I'm definitely a neutral girl. Like all of my base furniture is neutral, but I'm getting out the pink pillows and the green pillows, and I'm bringing the forsythia in from the backyard, and I'm shopping my house and like, oh, that book with the beautiful, when you open it, it's a 2-page spread of like blooming peonies. Like, let me open that up and put it on my coffee table. So I really like my house to feel like it's in keeping with the season, but I don't want to buy a bunch of plastic stuff I have to pack up and store away, you know, 10 months, 11 months out of the year. So I think the seasons are a great time to just creatively feel like my house gets it. Like, you don't walk into my house, you're like, your house thinks it's like 1974 in the middle of winter. No, I want my house to know it's spring. And so just making little changes like that. And like you, I have only lived in my house about a year and a half. And I think it takes a couple of years to get to know our home. So in some ways, I think it's nice to feel like our rooms are complete in the way that they're functional. They work for us. We feel good about them. But also, because we are humans who are ever evolving, our family is growing and changing, our needs change, home is there to serve us. So of course, it's always changing with us. And I just want to have the outlook of like, that's a really fun thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, and that brings to mind my next question for you, because honestly, decorating can be expensive. You know, like there's a lot of things that I'm like, I'm just going to wait. I'm not just going to just fill my walls with things that I don't love just to fill the room. I'm going to wait until I can afford what I really would like. But you know, things that you were just talking about, like getting cuttings from your backyard, there are really affordable ways to, and then you were even talking about like, I don't know, did you say thrifting? But you said you've gotten things secondhand with your dishes and things. So there are ways to really get creative that you don't have to break the bank, right?
Absolutely. I mean, right now, the most wonderful thing in creation is Facebook Marketplace for those of us who love secondhand things. And I will tell you, if I were the richest person in the world, I would still seek out secondhand items because nothing will add to the soul of your home with like bringing in something that has a past life, that has a history. So my secondhand things that I use are many of my favorite pieces, and they also don't feel, I don't buy precious secondhand. I buy like stuff with dings and cracks, and you're like, wow, it lasted. It's here in the thrift store or at the antique mall, and it's got a crack in it, and it's only $20, and it looks amazing. So now I don't have to worry about being so careful with it. I definitely follow that. It's helpful to know, you know, what to focus on if you have an empty room for some reason, and you're just starting, you know, you want to focus on that seating surfaces and storage. That's where, if you have any money, you put that there. You can always paint your walls. You can always go. And I love to just get old canvas. Now, I've been doing this for 30 years. So I have a basement with some different big size canvases in it of paintings that I've had in the past, or, you know, art off of the shelf that I bought from the Garden Ridge or something like that, the at-home store. And I keep those because from time to time I want to fill a big wall, and I'll just pour extra wall paint on them. And you kind of make a more of a modern art, because I can't paint a silhouette or my cat or a house or a scene. But that has served me really well. I mean, I'm looking over here and it's like all these old canvases that I have that were just secondhand that I just dotted and spilled paint on, and they go with my house because they're the colors that I have, but I didn't have to really pay for any of it. They're in secondhand frames. Lamps are another great thing to find secondhand. Two of my favorite sofas I've ever found, one was $100, another one was $125 secondhand. You know, you do have to be careful with upholstered pieces, but if you can find leather, you're good. And then case goods, pieces of furniture that are made from wood. If I can look secondhand first, like usually I look secondhand first, unless I'm on a deadline. You know, our dining room table is secondhand. A lot of our dressers, many of those are secondhand. A lot of times they're made better than even what they're making today. So everything has a cost. Some cost is money. Some cost is the time to look on Facebook Marketplace and then, you know, hope you're not talking to a killer and go to their house and, you know, have to be weird and look at the drawers where they're watching and then find someone with a truck to get it. Like, everything has a cost. If you want to make changes in your life, there will be a cost, but money is not the only way to pay.
Absolutely. Well, so you talk about maybe the single most important decision that you recommend that we can start with. So I'd love to hear what that decision is and why it's so important.
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Did I say anything about what that is? I can tell you my single most, the thing that helped me when I was decorating that I was like, aha, it really changed the feel of my space. And it was about 13 years ago, we had moved to a fixer-upper and I had decorated the living room and it didn't feel right. You know, the feeling. I had stuff on my walls. I wasn't where you are. I was like, I put stuff out. I like did it. And I looked around, I was like, I don't like it. And I had a Pinterest board with photos of family rooms that I loved for inspiration. And I looked down the Pinterest board and I look up at my own room, like, what is it? Like, what do I need to buy? That was my mindset. Like, what am I missing? If I can just figure out what they bought that I don't have, then I can have my finished room. I was doing it all wrong. For some reason, it caught my eye and I looked at one of the photos and I counted the items. Now, of course, this is just a photo, so it wasn't the entire room, but I counted the items I could see in the photo. It was like 18, you know, two sofas, a chair, a coffee table, a plant on the coffee table, a pair of drapes, a chandelier. It was these very specific items. And then I looked up at my own house and I had like a coffee table with 14 tiny tchotchkes on it, a mantle with like a stack of books and a little clock and a little photo frame and a small art and layered on bigger art because my art wasn't big enough and it fell off. And then another table and a table in front of it. And my rug was too small. So I had another rug. I had 43 items in my home, Rachel, from just one vantage point. And that's when it hit me, like, oh, it's not that I don't have enough stuff. It's that I don't have the right stuff. I was honestly wasting money buying small, tiny things in honor of my family's budget, because it is scary and risky to buy the large $24 vase from Home Goods when I knew for a dollar I could get 10 little vases from the Goodwill. Look at me saving my family so much money. Those vases had zero visual impact because they were this big and clear. So they're like invisible, literally. And my house, my surfaces were full of stuff. And so that was such a moment of clarity for me. And I realized that every room that I had pinned that I liked had three things in common. They had large rugs on the floor, even if they had carpet, that went under the front, at least the front feet of all the main seating. They had drapes on the wall that allowed the room to feel cozy and textured. And if they liked pattern, they had pattern. If they liked color, they had color. But it added this softness to a room. It filled up visual space without filling up surfaces. And they had lighting. They had layers of lighting that were statement pieces. The lighting was not only functional, but the lighting, like the bases, were beautiful. They didn't have a little dorm light for $12 from Target like me. Like, oh, I better save money. So worried about saving money that I was wasting money. No, they had large lamps that had impact, that had presence, that we read as style. And so I had to reset my mindset, and it actually cost less. You can buy a little lamp for $20, or you can buy a large lamp secondhand for $20 if you know to look for it. I did not know to look for it. It totally changed my mindset of, like, I call it the homey trinity: rugs, drapes, and lighting. Once you get your seating and your surfaces in, and most of us are good at that. We know, like, there's no place to sit. We got to have a place, a coffee table. We need a place to put our coffee cup. We want something to balance out the TV. We're good at that part. What we're not good at is the next step, which is the homey trinity. And then after that, the next step is your walls. So we always get it out of order. We want to paint our walls first. And then we're like, I can't find a sofa to match my walls. Well, paint $60 and a sofa can be a lot more than that. So switch it, you know, prioritize those more expensive things that you're going to sit in first, and then work from there. And it's like magic.
Oh, I cannot wait. You know, first of all, I'm trying to take notes in my head right now, but I just need to go and get your book, because I'm at that Holy Trinity stage right now. Okay. That's where I am. And I'm going to share with you as I go along on this journey.
It's going to be fantastic. I have already sent you, you'll get your book in a few weeks from me, because we're sending you one. So yay. But let's talk about nail holes real quick, because you mentioned that. Is that okay? Can I hijack your conversation? I totally understand. And, you know, moving here to a house with plaster walls made me even relate more, because like a nail hole could end up this big if you're not careful. And so you want to be mindful. But I want to tell you, a nail hole is not something that needs to be repaired. It doesn't mean you have hurt something. That's like saying, I don't want to wear clothes because then I have to do laundry. Like, well, what's the whole purpose of clothes? The whole purpose of walls in our home, I mean, give us some privacy in rooms, but the walls are there to hold your beautiful art. And a nail hole is something that can be so easily filled in or just covered up. I really encourage you, you know, our homes should be the safest place on earth to take a risk. And really, I just saw Martha Stewart talking about this the other day. She's like, it's not a risk, it's a chance. And I love that mindset. But if you do want to think of it as a risk, I think I have something in my eye. As parents, as friends, as people who have people in our lives, it's such a gift for us to see each other taking a risk. Where better place to start than in our home? With a paint color, with a pillow. Start with something you can return. Don't start by hiring painters to paint your two-story foyer bright pink. Start small. Maybe begin with, I have one of my house rules is you can't ruin something you already hate. So maybe if you are craving color, go to your garage. Maybe you have a little side table that you bought for $5 from the thrift store. Or just go buy a candlestick. Buy some, you know, find something that is a low investment and teach yourself how to add color, or, you know, take little risks. But when your kids see you taking a risk, and when they see you, you're going to make a mistake. You know, you're going to pick a wrong paint color, but paint it all over the walls. See what you like before you hire anyone or before you commit to it. And if it doesn't work, the best part is how you react to it. You say, oh, well, it's just walls. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. Next weekend, I'll try again. Or in a few weeks, I'll try again. And I think that changes our perspective just as much as anyone else. If we want to raise kids who are, going to take the risk and try out for the team, try out for the job across the country, start a company, we want to do those things in our own life, but we can't pick a paint color for a wall. Let's practice risking in the safest place on earth, our home.
Oh, that makes me giggle, honestly, because when you frame it in that way, it's like, it is just a wall.
It's
like,
just a wall.
I literally have boxes of things from my old houses that we have in our barn, like in our attic, and I just can't commit. So I just need to get over it.
Well, I'm excited for you. And just pick one room. Pick one room to focus on, and don't worry about your other rooms. Maybe the room where you're like, this is the room where I know I'm going to want like some of my favorite stuff, my favorite art, and work through those steps. Make sure you know how you want to use the room and for how many people. You have your seating, your surfaces, and your storage. Get that homey trinity, and then think about your walls. Maybe I love white walls. Maybe you're like, oh no, my walls are good. But I always, think about if I need a wall treatment, I call it a wall Sabbath. I think it's nice to have some walls empty. Every wall doesn't have to be full. When you have some empty walls, it draws so much attention to the walls that have things on them. Think about like an art museum. And we all have different thresholds for how full or empty we want our house. There's no right or wrong. But you might be someone who really enjoys a lot of margin. I think I definitely am someone. I have a lot of empty walls in my home. I don't have a lot of pattern. I just love empty space, feels luxurious to me, and I enjoy that. And there's nothing wrong if you enjoy that as well.
A wall Sabbath. Okay. That's and honestly, my husband is that way. He actually, if I put a lot of like knick-knacky stuff even on like the island, he's wanting it cleared because it just stresses him out. We've not really talked about that, but even if we have a certain style and maybe our spouse or our kids or somebody else has a different style, how do you learn to kind of even mesh those styles? Like, do you always win in your household? Like,
I don't always win, but I win on the things that are more important to me than my husband. And that, so that's the conversation you have to have is if, when we're doing our family room, like my husband spends as much time in there as I do. And so I want him to have a say. And sometimes he's like, I don't care. Now, if I ask him, which one of these pillows, he'll say that one. Now, it doesn't mean like, oh, my husband hates this one. I think sometimes we ask for it. We're like, well, my husband hates rugs, so I can't have rugs. Well, 2 years ago, your husband was put on the spot and was like, why do we need a rug? So sometimes we just need to open up the lines of communication. If you are really having some tension, I think one of the best ways to kind of provide a language for decorating with two people that have different styles maybe is to both create a Pinterest board. Take a couple weeks, say you create a Pinterest board. If your husband doesn't know how, show him how it works. Like, I want you to pin any family rooms that you love. And then I'm going to do it too. And the next Saturday, we're going to go to coffee and we're going to look at each other's rooms. What will happen all the time is you look at his board and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And he looks at yours and he's like, oh, I thought you wanted like pink flowers and everything. And so you will find this commonality. And it's much more easier to communicate in photos than it is with just being him trying to describe his style to you. And another thing is just saying like, how important is this to you? Like, okay, I know you don't like this pillow, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it matter? He'll be like, oh, a 1. Or he might say a 25. And then you'll know.
Yeah. No, it's just, I'm just thinking of us as we were building. I would just say, I know, like, he was like, you're just terrible at saying what you want, because I couldn't make a decision. But I'm like, if you show me 2 or 3 options, I can pick out of those 3 options.
That's good.
And so I do struggle to visualize things until I actually see it in a store. Yeah. And I'm like, that's it. I know it. Or like when it works, it works. Yes. But I sometimes don't know how to even articulate it. So you've just been so helpful to me personally, and I'm sure everybody listening. One of the questions I've been asking all of my guests this season is just, what is something you are loving right now? It can be anything, mm-hmm. food, product, something, design, or a person. It doesn't matter. No rules. No rules.
I am loving I don't know what it's called. On Amazon, I have like a Masterpiece BBC subscription. And I just love watching like the Durrells and Corfu. I love watching, I just finished Sanditon. Like all those shows are just so inspiring and relaxing and beautiful. And so I watch a lot of times during my lunch break, I'll go in my living room and eat my little sandwich and watch a little episode. All Creatures Great and Small. That's what I'm watching right now. I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, no, I loved that too, but I've never done any of the masterpieces. We just finished The Crown last night and loved it so much. So we need something else to watch. So maybe it's hard to find something even with your whole family, like something we can all enjoy doing together. Yeah. So I imagine that would be something as well. But thank you so much for today. The fact that you share your gifts and it helps so many other people to create a home. I just am thinking, even just biblically, you know, our Jesus was a great, he loved hospitality, and especially in the Old Testament times. And so, you know, sometimes it can, like, our home is important. It's where we are most of the time. We can invite people into it. It can be our ministry. And so I think what you're doing is just really special, and we might as well enjoy life, right? And God is such a creative God, and he's given us that talent and that gift to be creative as well. And so I've just loved today's conversation. It's been fun and heartwarming for myself as well.
I love it as well too. I could talk about home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and never get tired. I think it's just my dream job. I love the internet. I love what it's given to us, and able to connect with you in Kentucky, and I'm in North Carolina, and the listeners, every place they are, like, what a gift, what a time that we live in to be able to, you know, get a peek into each other's lives and encourage each other. And even the podcast is a form of encouraging hospitality. And I absolutely love that.
Oh, well, me too. Well, let me pray for us as we close, and then we'll get all your contact information, because I know that I'm going to want to stay connected with you. I know listeners are going to want to as well. So let's pray, and then you can give us that information. Father, we just love you so much, and we just thank you for making your home in us. And we just give you our homes, Father. For every woman listening, whether her home is the home of her dreams or not, Father, we know that it could be a welcoming environment, because it really is not so much about the stuff, but it's about the people in it, and how we can make others feel, and how we can share your love. But also, Father, we're just thankful that you've made us creative beings. And so we celebrate how you've made us, and let us just enjoy this fun desire of our heart, and just being and making a home for our family, for us, and for you, and to welcome our neighbors into it. Father, we just love you so much. It's in your holy and mighty name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Well, so Myla Quinn, I would love for you just to tell us how to get the book, how to stay connected with you. Do you even have like a shop where we can like shop your picks of the day? I mean, I'm thinking like I want to just buy what you bought. That's what I want. So sweet.
Oh my gosh. Well, the book House Rules releases April 23rd. Everywhere books are sold. Please support your local bookstore. I always think that's the best place if possible. And I do have an Amazon shop, like an Amazon storefront. If you go to thenester.com/store, it's there. But I get so many things secondhand. I don't just talk about it. Like it's true. My tree right here, I got from Facebook Marketplace, this chair over here, the table, this is secondhand. All my artists, like, so I don't have a lot of links. It's a bit frustrating, but that's just how it is. But I'm on the Instagram at The Nester. I talk about home, and my goal is for everyone to leave encouraged. Like it ain't fancy. It's very imperfect. It's very approachable. And I just want to encourage people in their home. And so I see the world through house colored glasses online at thenester.com. I have a community, a private community. It's like $10 a month. And I teach in there every week. We work through the order of decor. People pick a room at a time. It's a great place to like load your questions and your photos and then get great encouraging advice. It's just, I don't know. I just think the online community is so wonderful, and I found my people, and I'm so glad that you're a part of it. And home can be such a fun, it doesn't have to be intimidating. It can be fun.
Well, this has been fun, and I've left encouraged, and it makes me want to go and shop secondhand right now. Yay! So I may just go do that with the rest of my day. But thank you so much for your time, and thank you for helping us to make our houses a home.
Oh, it's an honor. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode with Michael Lynn Smith. We hope that today encouraged you to make your house a home. If you're interested in show notes, you can head on over to @RachelAdamsAuthor on Instagram or Facebook. I'd love to connect with you there. I'd also love to connect with you over on RachelKAdams.com. There you can subscribe to receive my weekly love offering newsletter, and all of this information can go straight to your inbox each week. You can also listen to previous podcast episodes, you can read the blog series, and you can download free resources like the Mother's Day Devotional. This is a guide that teaches about the biblical mothers from past to present so that you can be encouraged in your own motherhood journey. I'd love to share that resource with you again at rachelkadams.com/free. Next week, my guest is Heather Creekmore. She is on the show talking about how to age gratefully. I can't wait to chat with you again then, but until then, I hope you have a terrific week. And as always, remember to lead with love.